Today is October 17th, 2022. This is part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Bonnie McAllister. Bonnie's name is spelled B-O-N-N-I-E, M-C, capital A-L-I-S-T-E-R. And my name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Bonnie. How are you today?
I'm great today.
Super. Bonnie, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, you have my permission.
Thank you. Bonnie, I wanted to ask you for a little bit more details going back to 1959. Your dad was resupplying river trips that year, and it was during the summer. He had summer off from school. And there was an accident that happened on one of the river trips. Can you tell me about that story?
I just remember, you know, and the older you get, the less you can remember. But I'm pretty sure that we were down at the river hauling in supplies for Georgie when we got word. And I'm not sure how my dad got the word, if someone came down the river in a boat, or how he received the word that there had been an accident, that this man had fallen off a cliff and was in serious condition. And they needed to take him out of the river at that point in time. But it was right near, somewhere close to Lava Falls, as I remember, because I believe that that's where the helicopter came in. I could be wrong about this, because I'm not positive, but it made such an impression on me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was left there probably to take care of the animals or to finish packing and taking supplies down in, because Georgie was going to be there soon. I don't know, but I was in charge.
Okay.
My dad left to go to Tuweep, because that's where Riffy had a phone or some kind of communication he was able, and I don't know what that was exactly, to be able to get help, and a helicopter came and picked this man up. And I remember the helicopter coming, flying up the canyon, because there are narrow parts of the canyon, and so you can't always get an airplane or a helicopter into the canyon, only at certain places. But once you get down in, then you can fly up the canyon.
Okay.
So,
right. I just researched this river trip not too long back. That gentleman took a fall in Elves Chasm at River Mile 117, and they weren't sure he was going to live through the night, but he did. And the next morning they took off, they put him on the boat, and they took off, and they ran from 117 all the way to Whitmore to 284. So it was a long day on the water. They ran Lava Falls. And and your dad then went by horseback from the top of the Whitmore Trail up across the Esplanade that would have gone past Paw's Pocket, going
right
eastbound all the way to Riffy's Ranger Station, which is a good day's walk, but on horse you could do it faster.
Right.
Maybe a half day's walk, three quarters of a day's walk. It's not that far. But a ways, and by horse, there's no trail.
Right, right.
And Riffy had a radio, and that got the helicopter involved. Was it late in the afternoon that helicopter came in, or early in the morning? Do you remember?
No, as I remember, it was somewhere around late morning, midday.
Okay.
But I don't know that for sure.
Right. And that was the only the second recorded time of a helicopter coming into the canyon to rescue river runners, the first time being in 1950. And of course, it would be used again the following year in 1960 for another injured person. It was the, so that just how that, you know, the helicopter was a new thing at the time coming in there. And that gentleman survived, not only survived, but came back in to finish off the river trip. Did you get a chance to see him again?
We saw, he came to our house, and I don't know if that was the trip. I don't know where he connected with Georgie to finish that trip.
Okay.
If it was at Whitmore, or if it was further up the river somewhere that he came in, like Phantom Ranch or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember that he came back and finished the trip. And you may have more information on that than I do.
What do you remember about that visit?
I just remember that he had dinner with us at our house.
Oh, wow.
And he said something about, I'm sure this is delicious or whatever, and that opened the conversation, and we learned then that because of his fall, he could no longer taste or smell, but it looked good to him, and he made that comment, and I thought, oh, how awful it would be to go through life, the rest of your life, not being able to taste or smell anything.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That made quite an impression on me.
Hmm.
But also a great lesson in how you can take adversity and still be very positive.
That's right.
About life and the things that happen.
That's right. Nice.
So,
nice.
Yes.
And I'm, let's see, in 59, how old would you have been then?
Well, let's see, I was born in 46.
So 4 and 9, been 13 or 14, something like that?
13, uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. 13, 14, probably, about the time I was ready to go to St. George to school, or maybe I had been there already for a year.
Okay. And had your summers off and were back at the ranch.
And right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it like to transition from the Mount Trumbull one-room schoolhouse to schooling in St. George? How did that work out?
It was really difficult. And I was the first one in my family to, actually, my older sister graduated from high school. She was the first one in our family to graduate from high school. I was the second. I was the first one to go to college and graduate from college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I could understand why my older siblings had quit school and got married or whatever, because it was very difficult for them. You know, I mean, we all begged Mom and Dad, please, please, don't send us to St. George to go to school. We'll do anything. We'll stay here and work on the ranch. We'll do anything, but we don't want to go to St. George to go to school. And it was hard. But I was also probably more social than the other kids in my family, just because I spent so much time with my dad and going on cattle inspections and just being with him in general. And so I got to meet a lot more people and hear people's life experiences. And so I think it was probably easier for me.
Okay.
It was difficult. It was really hard. I made some friends at school, some lifelong friends that I still keep in touch with today that were in high school. And I don't know that any of my older siblings ever made lifelong friends in school. I don't think they stayed in school long enough. They ended up getting married and having families. So anyway.
What made it difficult? I mean, besides the fact that you weren't with your mom and dad, you didn't have horses to ride, you didn't have, you know, pets, dogs, chickens.
Right.
And
the chores to do.
Yep.
You know.
But who were you staying with?
Well, when I first went to St. George, I stayed with my older sister and her husband.
Okay.
Nina V and Alfred Hughes. And they were married and they had two children already.
Okay.
And a third child was born right about the time or just before I went to school. And so I would get up in the, my sister ended up contracting mumps.
Oh.
And yes, when the baby was just a couple of weeks old. And so I would get up in the mornings and give the baby a bath and take care of it, you know, until it was time to go to school. Then I would walk to school, come home and do, you know, take care of the older children and the baby in the evening until they went to bed. And so I did that for 1 year, and then the next year I moved, my grandma and grandpa had moved to St. George at that time, that next year, and so I went and lived with them for a year. Well, actually, I lived with them for 4 years.
This was James.
Yes, James and Chloe.
James and Chloe. Oh my gosh, what do you remember about them? This would have been 1959 or 60.
Right, right. Grandma was a very stern and strict person. Grandpa was more kickback. Grandma told him what to do,
okay,
when to do it, and how fast to do it. And he just did it. You know, he never mumbled. He never grumbled. He just, you know, just was happy to be there.
Okay.
And, yeah. So, and then Grandma had, they had a little room that was attached to the house, but it had its separate entrance. So I lived there, and then by that time, my younger sister was coming to St. George to go to school, and so the two of us stayed in this little room. It had a stove and a little kitchen area and a bathroom and all of that. So it was almost like our own separate apartment.
Okay.
And I started to work. I started cleaning houses for people in St. George and started babysitting. That's how I earned extra money.
Okay.
To be able to buy things that I needed and wanted.
Mm-hmm.
In St. George. And then later on, I think I was probably 11th grade, I got a job in the bakery.
Oh, wow.
And would go, and my first job in the bakery was frying the donuts early in the morning.
That doesn't sound like too bad job.
No, it wasn't too bad. And then after school, I would come in and fry donuts and then go to school, and then I'd come back in the afternoon and we'd bag bread.
Okay.
And so that was, and along with that job, I babysat for a lady who had five children and helped clean her house and take care of those children.
Nice.
On my days off or whenever I had spare time.
Okay.
So,
So it was busy. It was a it was a busy time. Sounds like.
Yes, and I think because of those experiences, I was probably more social than the rest of the family.
Okay.
And that's why I, you know, was continued on to go to school and graduate from Dixie College. And
okay. I want to come back to something you mentioned about, you know, sort of begging your folks to stay out at the ranch. I'm assuming it was as difficult for your parents as it was for you. Did they ever talk about that later on?
Well, we knew that it was hard for Mom, but the only reason we knew it was hard was because when my two younger brothers finished the eighth grade, Mom moved to St. George with them.
Oh, my. Okay.
To go to school. So she was not about to be left at home alone when those two boys left to go to school.
Okay.
So, but, you know, they never really made us feel bad that we were leaving them, because they knew that it was for our best good.
Yes, but it must have been difficult for them, too.
Oh, yes. I'm sure it was, but
yeah,
you know, we never knew how difficult until later on in life.
Right, right. And also sort of living, I'd say, with strangers, because your sister, older sister, isn't a stranger, except, you know, she's a married woman now, and I'm trying to raise
right.
her family. Your grandparents are, you know, trying to live their retired days, and now have
right.
small children under feet. At least they had accommodations where you had your own place, but still, but then, you know, right out and working, getting a job,
uh-huh.
And you were able to make some friends.
Yes.
One
yes,
of,
and then we were able to go home on weekends too, because, grandma and grandpa would go home on the weekends, go back out to the ranch.
Okay.
And we could go with them out to the ranch, although they usually did not come back. Sometimes they did. They came back on a Sunday evening,
okay,
or an early Monday morning. But we couldn't go unless we knew that we had a way back.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, Mom and Dad or Dad would bring us back. Or one of our cousins would be coming back and we could get a ride with them or something like that. But, you know, it wasn't always easy to go home on the weekends.
Right, right. And then one of the things I wanted to talk about was the rodeo queen.
Oh, yeah, well, I had a cousin, Lavelle Wood, that was a rodeo queen, and I decided that I wanted to follow that in her footsteps. So I tried out and didn't make it, but I got third place, and which was a belt buckle.
Okay.
That I just recently gave to one of my granddaughters who
wow.
loves horses and is going to veterinary school.
Nice.
So, and she wears it all the time.
Awesome. Yeah, that's special. That's very nice.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of rocked back on my spurs as it is here. Why didn't you win?
Well, I think, and I was told later, because I was really disappointed. I mean, I thought nobody has spent more time on a horse than I have.
Right.
And so, but there's different styles of riding, and my style was more of a ranch hand style, you know, roping calves and chasing cows and that kind of thing, and you would just have to hang on for your dear life, and
yeah.
the horse would just take off, Well, trying out to be a rodeo queen, you had to be more sit up in the saddle straight, and you know, your presentation was the whole thing. Yeah, and I didn't have the presentation. And, you know, if I could have seen myself on a
Hey, Bonnie, we're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So, sorry.
Let's try again.
Okay, it was about, presentation was everything.
Yeah, and my presentation was not what they were looking for.
Hmm.
Gosh. And like I say, if I could have seen that, I probably could have improved that and could have possibly won that competition. But because I was riding the way I was comfortable.
Yeah.
In riding, and it wasn't the style that they were looking for.
Huh. Well, so. I'm totally clueless about this, and I'm like, yeah, but you can rope a calf. You can, you know, you can chase down. I mean, you can jump over fences, and you know.
Right, but that isn't what they were looking for.
Oh my!
They wanted someone who had good, finesse, good presentation.
Oh my gosh!
So, but it was a great experience. I learned a lot from that. I was terribly disappointed, but, you know, that prepared me for life.
Yes.
Because life has a lot of disappointments.
Yep.
And it's okay. You can pick yourself up and move forward.
That's right.
So it was a great learning experience.
Bonnie, you mentioned you were the first of your siblings to go to college. In your 11th and 12th grades of high school, were your parents kind of encouraging you to go that way, or was that something that came from you kind of looking around going, you know, I want to do that?
They were supportive with education. It didn't matter where or, you know, what education you pursued, they were very supportive of that. It was a goal that I set for myself because I wanted to do something that none of my other siblings had done before.
Oh, wow.
And so, I had a sister who graduated from high school, and I was determined that I was going to graduate from high school. And then I decided, you know, there's a college right here.
Mm-hmm.
I just as well take advantage of that. And so I
did. What attracted you? What did you get into?
Oh, probably my husband.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, of course.
Yes,
but,
well,
but.
I was in high school.
Right.
College, and when I first went to St. George to go to school, the high school and the college were on the same campus.
Oh, okay.
And so we didn't have classes with the college students, but we intermingled with them all the time. I mean, they ate in the same lunchroom, and they were just there. They were a part of the school.
Uh-huh. No, I'm sorry. I'm go back a minute. What attracted you in college in a field of study? Meaning, did you want to go into chemistry? Did you want to go into mathematics or teaching or what?
No, it was early childhood development.
Oh my!
Yeah. There was a teacher at the college. And she taught some high school classes, a few high school classes, but not a lot.
Okay.
But she taught sewing and cooking and early childhood development and all of that, and I took every single class that she taught.
What was her name?
Because her name was Mrs. Parkinson.
How do you
P-A-R-K-I-N-S-O-N, I think.
Was she from St. George?
Yes, she was from St. George.
Wow.
Well, I don't know that she grew up there. I don't know where she came from.
Okay.
But she was a resident there, you know, when I was at school.
Okay.
She lived there with her family. She had a daughter. Her daughter went on to college and became a pediatrician.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, yeah. And so just, I had a lot of examples, positive examples, in my life, and I thought, oh, I don't know that I want to be a pediatrician, but, you know, I could do early childhood development, which worked out well, because after I got married, I started doing daycare when I started having my own children, and I did daycare in my home for 30 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Did she inspire you, Mrs. Parkinson's, to go through college and get your degree?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Nice.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And she taught sewing classes, told us that we could make all of our own clothes, and I did for a long time.
Wow.
All my own clothes. And she said, you can even make a man's suit if you want to. That's not beyond your reach.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would teach us things that would be helpful if we ever decided that we wanted to make a man's suit. And I would sew all of my husband's shirts when we first got married.
Nice. Lucky Alan to get hand-tailored shirts. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, and I made Levi's for my kids, you know, when Levi's, let's see, what was the name of that Levi that the kids all wanted to wear?
Oh, the corduroy kind of thing, or?
No, it was a brand name Levi that was very expensive.
Okay.
It was kind of like Gloria Vanderbilt, but it wasn't that. Anyway, I made their Levi's for a while, you know.
So you made that cut?
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah.
That needs a pretty robust sewing machine.
Yeah, well. I'll let my husband tell you about my first sewing machine.
Okay. Well, is Alan there? Can I speak with him?
He is, and I'll let you speak with him.
Thank you, Bonnie.
So where do you want to start? Do you want to start with how I met this young lady?
Well, Alan, I
the sewing machine.
Thank you so much for your willingness to participate in this oral history. Where I need to start is to ask you for your permission to record this oral history over the telephone.
Absolutely, you've got my permission.
Thank you. How is it that you ended up at St. George going to college? Where did you grow up? How did you end up there? Let's back up a little bit.
Okay, I grew up in Pasadena, California, where we still live. Well, it's Altadena, but Pasadena and Altadena are the same thing. I grew up here, all through school here. Then when I graduated from high school, I entered Pasadena City College. And I tell people that in high school I majored in perfume and exhaust fumes. And when I went to college at PCC, it was just a continuation of my high school experience. I tell people I had a 4-point average in high school. I got 1 point as a freshman, 1 point as a sophomore. And by the time I got out of high school, I had 4 added up. Anyway, I wasn't exactly what you'd call a good student. And, I wanted more than what I was going to get from Pasadena City College because all my friends were there. And it was just a continuation of high school.
I see.
So my dad had a friend that lived in St. George, and so on January 1st, 1961, I traveled to St. George and enrolled in school and lived with this family for a couple of weeks, and that didn't work out real well, and I got an apartment. But anyway, that's how I ended up going to school in St. George, and absolutely loved it. It was a whole different experience for me. I had teachers that cared. I had some really great teachers.
Nice.
And met a lot of really good guys, and a bunch of nice young ladies too.
Uh-huh. Was this at the time, as Bonnie had mentioned, where the university students and the high school students all were in the same dining area?
Yes, yes.
On the same campus?
It was all on one campus.
Okay.
We shared classrooms. You know, the high school and the college students didn't meet in the same classroom at the same time.
Right.
But we met in the same classrooms.
Okay.
It was, there. You know, there were less than 200 students at Dixie College at the time.
Oh, wow.
So we knew everybody.
What were you majoring in? Did you have a major at the time or an area of interest, or were you just sort of?
I wanted to go to dental school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I entered into a dental program at St. George. It was heavily into mathematics, physics, chemistry, biology. That's what my major was, and I had some really good instructors. I did fairly well. I was actually accepted into a Loma Linda University, that's a long story. I ended up.
I'm sorry.
In a really bad car accident.
Okay. So hang on a second. You did really, really well, and then you mentioned you were accepted into something, and I'm like, wait, what was that?
Loma Linda University.
Oh, okay. So back in California.
Yes. Anyhow, I didn't. Before I entered college here in California, I had a really bad car accident that laid me up for a couple of years, and I lost some of the mobility of my right arm, and I had to retest, and I could not pass the agility test.
Oh, wow.
So it took me out of dental school.
Oh, my.
Anyway, whatever. No big deal.
Yep. But along the way, you met somebody.
Yeah. It was probably in 1962, either September or October of 62. I was in the lunchroom, and this young lady that had been working in the lunchroom in the cafeteria, left the cafeteria and was walking down the hallway, and she went into the women's restroom. And when I saw her walk by, I mistook her for a friend, another girl that I used to tease a lot. And I walked over, and the restroom door opened out into the hallway, not into the restroom. And so I stood there in front of the door with my foot up against the door, waiting for this gal to come out. Well, it wasn't who I thought it was. It was Bonnie. And being raised on a ranch, when she decided she wanted to come out that door, she came out the door. Anyway.
It stuck. I'll fix that, she says.
Here I am standing there waiting for this other gal to come out, and it wasn't her. It was Bonnie.
Oh.
And to my knowledge, I had never really seen her before. She never caught my attention. She was a high school student, and I wasn't really interested in that. And anyway, here I'm standing there, and she comes out the door, and I just apologized to her, explained to her I thought that she was somebody else, and yeah, right. And so I said, "Can I take you uptown to the Dairy Queen and get you a root beer foot freeze?" And she said, "Sure." So off we went to the DQ and had our root beer freeze, and I came back, drove her back down to the campus and dropped her off in front of the campus, and her boyfriend was standing on the curb.
Oh!
Oh! Anyway, he made some comments, and Bonnie, being the person that she is, a very strong-willed person, is, you're not going to tell me what to do. And so anyway, that was the end of that relationship. And later in the week, I asked her to go to Cedar City to to a movie in Cedar City, and which is 50 miles to the north.
Okay.
And she said yes. So anyway, we were off and running.
Nice.
That's how we met.
What else do you remember about your courtship?
Oh, mercy. At times it was a little difficult because I was raised a Catholic and she was raised in the Mormon Church.
Okay.
And her father was had been a bishop for, 19 years?
Okay.
21 years. And, you know, out in that little town of Mount Trumbull. And anyway, it was evident that if this was going to go anywhere at all, you know, I was going to have to join the Mormon Church because she sure wasn't going to join the Catholic Church.
Right.
And I had been investigating the Mormon Church since 1959.
Okay.
Some missionaries came to our home here in Pasadena, and you know, I wasn't really interested at the age of 17, 18 about any churches. I had stopped going to the Catholic Church. You know, it was interesting. I started going to church with her. My roommate that I had was preparing to go on a mission, and so he was feeding me all kinds of information all the time. Anyway, it was something that I was really interested in, but I wasn't ready to make a commitment.
Yep.
And so her grandmother, which was the strongest person in the Bundy family, didn't like me at all.
Oh, my.
Because I was a Catholic, and I was dating her granddaughter. And anyway, it was well known among the family that I was not liked by Grandma.
Okay.
And
What was your take of Chet, and of Guinevere?
Nicest people you ever wanted to meet.
Nice.
They always treated me nice. I used to drive out there with Bonnie on Sundays to go to church and to have dinner, and then leave that Sunday evening to come back to town. And you know, I was really well accepted by the family.
Nice.
They were the nicest people you could possibly meet. I never felt that I wasn't welcome. We had lots of fun together. We played, you know, charade games and stuff like that. There was always something fun happening at that house.
Did you know how to ride a horse?
Not exactly. The lady that Bonnie babysat and cleaned house for had couple of horses, and I went horseback riding with Bonnie once, and we were up on the Red Hill there in St. George, and we came to a little bit of a ravine, and the horse kind of ducked his head, and I tell everybody that I got bucked off, but actually I just fell off.
Okay.
I just now admitted that to Bonnie for the first time ever.
But she knew it. She knew it when it happened.
Oh, yeah, I know. But it's been a topic of conversation ever since that happened.
Well, good for you.
Anyway, that was the end of my horseback riding.
Oh, my.
that was it. I don't think, did we ever go horseback riding again, Bonnie? No, we didn't. Anyway, it was a very interesting experience. Because we were so different in so many different ways. And, you know, took her to a prom. And before prom, we went out to dinner. And we went to the Sugarloaf Cafe, which was one of the nicer places in St. George. And it was later that I found out that Bonnie had never been in a sit-down restaurant before, ever.
Oh, my.
And she handled herself really well. The thing is, when I met her, she was a senior in high school, and she was 15 years old. And at the time, I was 20.
Okay.
5 years, I could go to jail for that.
Yep.
Anyway, by the time I found out how old she was, it was too late. I was hooked.
Okay.
And so, anyway.
But she was, she was hooked too.
Yeah. And I don't understand why.
Well, give yourself a little credit. He clearly is smart with mathematics and physics and wanted to go to dental school there and had a car and could help, you know, get her out for weekends where she, you know, could visit her folks, which she clearly loved, you know, dearly.
Not only that, it was a brand new car.
Oh, my.
It wasn't just any car. It was a 1962 Ford Galaxy 500 XL four-speed high-performance 390. No power steering, no air conditioning. You know, it was my car. And
wow.
Interesting story with that car was my dad bought that for me. When I was just a very young kid, he told me, he says, on your 21st birthday, if you're single, in school, you don't smoke, you don't drink, I'll buy you a brand new car of your choice.
Wow.
So I stayed true to my promise that my dad made to me and I made to him, and he bought me this 1962 Ford Galaxy 500. Black interior, chrome wheels.
What was your dad's name?
My dad's name was Alan. Alan Gordon.
Okay.
McAllister. Alan G.
And what were your dad and mom's take on Bonnie?
Dad said, if you don't marry her, I'm going to.
That's lovely.
Oh, my mom and dad loved this lady. Oh, man, I'll tell you. They thought she was the best thing that ever happened, and she is.
Nice. Nice.
So, anyway.
And then you mentioned an accident, and I'm thinking of that Ford Galaxy. What happened?
Well, that was the car, and I was in St. Joe. It was in the summertime, and I was in southern Utah there for the archery season for deer.
Oh, okay.
And archery was one of my hobbies. Cars was my main hobby, but girls fit right into that main hobby, too.
Right.
Anyway, I was up in St. George, north of St. George, up on Cedar Mountain, and I had been up for 3 days. I had not been to sleep.
Oh.
I was working here, moving furniture at a company that I started to work for when I was 14. And I worked all summers and stuff like that to pay for my education. Anyway, I was coming back from Cedar City, and I fell asleep at the Browse exit right by Leeds, and went off the edge of the road and hit a guardrail and put the guardrail through the car.
Oh.
Went in the front and out the back. And there was 67 feet of the guardrail hanging out the back of the car.
Oh.
And my brother was in the back seat, and it stuffed him out through the trunk and killed him.
Oh.
A friend of mine was in the front seat, in a bucket seat. He got a broken foot out of it, but I got hurt really bad. I broke my back. I was paralyzed. I broke my right femur. I broke my right hip. I broke a bunch of ribs and collapsed a lung, ruptured a kidney. Broke my right arm. Compound. My leg was compound. I was hurt real bad.
Yeah.
And
lucky to be alive.
I was very lucky to be alive. I went through the windshield. Didn't have my safety belt on, which saved my life. If I'd been on my seat, the rail went right through my seat.
Oh, wow.
And, I was a mess. And I was shipped to Salt Lake at the Holy Cross Hospital, where I was put in traction. And I was there for 3 months. And Bonnie left St. George, left Mount Trumbull, and came to Salt Lake and lived with her sister. And she came to the hospital every day for visiting hours in the morning. And then she would stay there all day and for visiting hours in the evening. And that's when I was absolutely positively certain that I wanted to marry this lady.
Mm.
Because of some things that took place at the hospital in regards to the church, the Mormon church, I was convinced that this is something I needed to do. And after 3 months, I was shipped home in a body cast from my armpits down lovely experience.
Oh, boy.
And I was in a body cast for 3 months. And in November, I asked my dad if he could possibly get Bonnie down to California for Thanksgiving. And so they did. So she came down for Thanksgiving. And I'm in this body cast laying in a hospital bed in the front room of my mom and dad's house. And she's sitting in a chair alongside of the bed. There was a little nightstand there. And I had previously purchased a set of diamond rings because I knew I wanted to marry this girl. I just knew that first off, I had to join the church. And I wasn't going to do that until I knew it was right. And so anyway, we're sitting there in the front room, and my mom and dad got ready to go to bed. And I was, you know, as far as during the day, I napped a lot. So I didn't sleep well at night. So the doctor had prescribed a sleeping pill and a tranquilizer that I took every night. So mom and dad came in, and this is going to be the most romantic thing you've ever heard. I want you to know that. Anyway, mom and dad went to bed. They gave me that medication before they went to bed. And I'm sitting there talking to Bonnie, and I reach over on this nightstand, and I pick up this little velvet blue box and flipped it open with my thumb, with my left hand, because my right arm was still in a cast. And I held this box out to Bonnie and said, "Would you marry me?" And then the problem was I passed out. And I never heard her answer. And the next morning, she came into the front room, and she was wearing the ring.
Oh, my.
So I assume that she said yes. Anyway.
That's lovely.
That's the most romantic thing I've ever done.
That's just lovely.
Anyway, I was cut out of the body cast just before Christmas, and I had to lay perfectly still for a while, and then I finally got to a wheelchair and got to crutches, and as soon as I was able to walk without crutches, I was baptized in the church. And when I...
Where did you do that?
I did this in Pasadena.
Okay.
Same church that we attend now, same building.
Okay.
So anyway, after I asked Bonnie to marry me, I wrote a letter to her dad asking him if it was all right if I married his daughter. And I guaranteed him that I would not marry her until I could be baptized.
Hmm.
So after I was baptized, 14 months later, we were married in the Los Angeles, or in the St. George Temple.
Nice.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah.
And when Bonnie got married, she already had one cow, and her dad gave her 5 cows.
Oh, wow.
She is a 6-cow woman.
Okay.
And anyway, we sold the cows and bought our first home, which was a 12-wide mobile home. And we lived in that for a year down here. And then
in Pasadena?
Trading the equities from that mobile home for a home in Pasadena.
Okay.
And so anyway.
Nice.
That's the way it works. After we got into our first real home, I had saved some money put aside, and she did not have a sewing machine. And so I went to a sewing machine store, and I bought her a sewing machine. Didn't tell her anything about it. I just went and bought this sewing machine, brought it home, and set it on the dining room table. She looked at that and says, "What's that?" I says, "It's a sewing machine." She says, "Yeah, I know it's a sewing machine, but what kind is it?" I said, "It's an Elna." I said they're a very good sewing machine. That's the kind my mom uses. And she said, well, my mom has a Singer. And I said, in all my stupidity, I said, well, what's the difference? They do the same thing. And then she said the wisest thing she ever said to me, which absolutely changed my life. She said, if you wanted a new rifle and you wanted a Winchester and I bought you a Remington, would you be happy?
Wow.
I picked up the sewing machine, grabbed her by the hand, went out, got in the car, and we went to the sewing machine store. And guess what kind of a sewing machine I bought her?
A Singer.
A Singer that she still has.
Nice.
And I learned the most valuable lesson on marriage, and that is communications. You need to be able to communicate. And I learned that in that one sentence.
Nice.
Anyway, I have performed several marriages over my years. And one of the fellows is a really good friend. And I told this story as we're standing at the altar. And he has told me several times that that little talk made the difference in his marriage. He went one time to buy a washing machine. And it was a used washing machine. And I was there at the shop when he left to go with his wife to look at the sewing machine. And when he came, or not sewing machine, washing machine.
Hmm.
And when he came back, I said, well, are you an owner? He says, no. It was a Remington, and she wanted a Winchester.
Excellent. That's just lovely.
Anyway, we have had a great life. We really have. I mean, it's unbelievable. I have never raised my voice to my wife. I never want to. She's just a wonderful lady that's worked hard all of her life. She knows how to cook. She knows how to sew. She knows how to, well, she's won a blue ribbon in the L.A. County Fair for her peanut brittle.
Wow.
She has entered cakes and flower arrangements at the L.A. County Fair, and she's never won anything with those, but she should have. She can do anything. I tell you, everybody, that one thing about Bonnie, I said, she could spit in the devil's eye. She's a good woman.
That's lovely. That's just lovely.
Anyhow,
so
I don't know if there's anything else you want to know about me or about our relationship.
Yeah, there is. It seemed that one of the things that Chet was doing was trying to run a ranch. And
absolutely.
And that's a hard thing. Your kids grow up, they move away, they start their own families. And in talking with Bonnie, it seemed like she wanted to take over the ranch. Or she wanted to be, you know, her father's right-hand ranch hand. And so how did she transition out of that? Maybe I need to ask Bonnie that question.
Well, I can tell you that I pulled her out of St. George kicking and screaming to move to Southern California.
Okay.
whether or not she would have ever run the ranch or not, I don't know, because she had two younger brothers that pretty much ran the ranch.
Okay.
And what, Bonnie?
They took over
Bonnie's spot when she left.
Alan, can you give me Bonnie on the phone, please?
Sure.
I'm here.
Thanks, Bonnie. So Alan has told me the wonderful story about the Winchester and the Remington. And I'm trying to relate that to Pasadena and Tuweep and Mount Trumbull.
Right. It doesn't relate at all.
Okay.
It's two different worlds.
Okay. So how did you manage the transition?
From St. George to California?
Yeah.
That was hard. I cried for 2 years because I hated it here. Absolutely hated it and wanted to go back. And we even bought property in Washington, which is right next to St. George.
Right.
Washington, Utah. And we bought property and we're going to build a house on it. And we put our home here in Altadena up for sale. And there were like 6 houses on the block that were up for sale all at the same time. And all of them sold. But we didn't even get an offer.
Oh, my.
So we took that as a sign that maybe we should not move. And so we stayed. I learned to love it here. This is home. You couldn't drag me back to St. George to live now.
Okay.
It was a whole change in attitude.
Okay.
So I put down my roots here, and we raised our family here, and this is home now, and has been for a long time.
Yeah, for, 50 years?
Right.
Over that.
It's just a whole change in attitude. It's how you look at things, and you need to bloom where you're planted. You know, and so that's it. And by that time, my 2 younger brothers had taken over the ranch and were pretty much doing all the ranch work with Dad and everything. And you know, that wasn't a part of me any longer. I had to move on.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, it's when I think of the Arizona Strip, it's a hard life. Nothing comes easy.
Right.
It's not like there's a place to go get a half gallon of milk, you know,
right,
3 blocks away. Well, right, there is. It's called, yeah, a cow. You've got to milk,
right,
it, but that's a little different.
Right.
You know, by the time that chore is done, you could have gone, gotten the milk, come back, made a cup of coffee, and carried on.
Right.
So it's a, in looking back now at your time on the Strip, what advice would you give people living in Pasadena? I mean, I think of the Los Angeles Valley. There's how many million people there? And maybe you've mentioned that already, which is just a change in attitude.
That's right. That's all it is. It's just a change in your environment, in your attitude. Your attitude is the biggest thing, you know. You just need to make the best of where you are, no matter what the situation. Make the best of it. Be positive.
Yeah. Lovely.
And when you do that, then everything starts to fall into place, and you're happier, and everybody around you is happier, and, you know, life is just so much better.
Yes. And with 2 people as a couple, there has to be some give and take. And that,
absolutely,
communication is a lovely thing to make that happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And you still have that singer.
I do.
Are you still sewing?
I'm still sewing.
Oh, good,
yep,
for you. That's wonderful.
I only have 5 more sewing machines now.
Okay. did you get a what is it? It's the thing that makes those really funny edge stitches that has like multiple thread bobbins and they all come down together.
Oh, yes.
An edger? What's that thing called?
Serger?
A serger. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, I have a serger.
Nice.
All of my other sewing machines, that's the only sewing machine we have ever bought. All the other sewing machines that I've had have been given to me
Wow.
by other people. and I have given one of those sewing machines away to a granddaughter-in-law.
Nice.
And getting ready to give another one to another granddaughter-in-law.
Nice.
To sew.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, excellent. That's really lovely. Well, thank you so much for just such a wonderful oral history journey here. Is there anything else either one of you or Alan, would like to add before we wrap things up?
Is there anything you want to add, Alan?
Yeah, I thought of something just a minute ago, and now I don't remember what it was.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to wait a little bit just in case Alan remembers.
Okay.
Sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I remember.
Right.
Well,
there's some things here in Southern California that cannot be replaced with any other area. The weather, number one. And you know, growing up out on the Strip, it was cold a lot of times.
Yep.
You know, and we just had a one bedroom house. And so when there were lots of kids at home, the older kids would have to sleep out in what we called the wash house, which was where the washing machine was, another little building. But it was a wood halfway up, and then the top part of it was screened.
Okay.
And the screen around this wash house, in the wintertime, the snow would blow through the screen onto the bed.
Right.
And you'd wake up in the mornings with snow, covered in snow on your bed.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I remember being cold a lot out there. And, you know, our heater broke one time here in California. And Alan had a friend who worked for the Edison company, or gas company.
Uh-huh.
And he knew where I'd grown up and everything. And he says, anybody that has grown up in that kind of weather, she is not going to be cold for another night. And so he came over right then and fixed our heater.
Oh my.
And so anyway, the weather is the biggest reason.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
We live here, I think.
And it doesn't snow, and it's
right.
It rains enough that things are green, and
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It snowed in 1948.
Did it? That's got to be a rare occasion when it snows in the LA Valley there, around the mountains. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Down below.
And this is the only place that you can drive for an hour and play in the snow.
Hmm.
Come back, you know, and go play at the beach all in the same day.
Right.
You know, it's a wonderful place to live. Just too bad it's so darned expensive.
Yeah. Yep.
But
everything's at a price. Something's going to cost when something's, you know, it's pros and cons.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm waiting for it.
Bonnie was raised in a sort of a different situation. I mean, it was like it was in the 1800s. You know, raised in a place where there was, you know, no electricity, no running water, you know, no nothing. Just out in the middle of 60 miles from the closest town on a dirt road is out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And in our church, we talk a lot about the pioneers that crossed the plains and that kind of thing. And we respect the pioneers for what they did.
Yes.
Well, Bonnie was a pioneer. I mean, the way she was raised was like pioneer days.
Mm.
And every time that there's somebody that wants to, you know, have some kind of a talk on pioneers and whatever, guess who gets tagged to give the talk?
Oh, good.
Because she lived it.
Yeah.
And you know, today's her birthday.
Oh, my.
But she's not 100 years old or 150 years old, but the way she was raised was, you know, pioneer experiences. And she belongs to an organization called Daughters of the Utah Pioneers. And anyway, she's a very popular speaker.
I bet.
In talking about her life. And anyway, we were married in 1965, and I met her in 62. And we had a really interesting courtship. Things were really great with her grandmother after I joined the church. All of a sudden, I was a good guy.
Oh, good. I'm glad you patched it up.
Anyway.
That's lovely. You know, when I think about Bonnie and her upbringing, you made do with what you had.
Absolutely.
And you became good at everything. And well, that's just very, that's a very good skill to have, that it's easy to lose in when things are easier, I guess, in quotes.
Well, she still has the doll that she had as a little girl.
Hmm.
That the doll would disappear before Christmas and reappear at Christmas time with a new handmade dress.
Oh, my.
And that's what she would get for Christmas.
Right.
Was the same doll with a new dress. And she didn't even know that it was the same doll until a couple of years later when she got the doll. And the doll had been outside or something, and the sun had wrinkled one side of its face or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so she knew that it was the same doll. But it was all right because it had a new dress.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and yeah. That's the way she was raised. And that's the way we run our family.
Yeah.
You know, we make do with a lot of things. But when we need something that's important, we step up and get it.
That's right.
And
that's right.
You know,
yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah. And you figure it out.
I don't think I ever told you. I went to work for a trucking company when I was 14. They didn't know how old I was.
Okay.
Until I filled out my first paperwork and didn't know what it was. How many dependents do you claim?
Oh, my.
And I told him, I says, because she asked me, she says, are you married or do you have any children? And I says, what? I'm 14 years old. And all of a sudden, I got busted from doing a man's job to being around the yard just doing stuff because they liked me.
Yep.
And I worked for that same company until after we were married.
Hmm. Okay.
And I spent the rest of my life driving truck.
Nice.
I drove truck for a major, the last 25 years I worked, I drove for Vaughn's Grocery Company, which
okay.
is a major company here in Southern California.
Yes.
And retired as a Teamster. We've got a good retirement, and we've
good.
Got everything that we could possibly want. I have a bad habit. I have a race car.
Okay.
That I race at the Bonneville Salt Flats.
Oh, my.
And very successfully. I don't drive it, but, you know, that's my bad habit. And all men have a bad habit of some kind.
One thing or another that makes our hard-suffering wives mumble.
Absolutely. So I don't complain how many sewing machines she has.
Exactly.
And she doesn't complain about my race car.
And I'm impressed she's got a serger. That's
Oh yeah.
Those are complicated gizmos.
Well, she's got a serger. She's also got a embroidery machine.
Ooh.
That she can embroider all kinds of stuff, and
wow.
People are always bringing a towel or something to her to have a name embroidered on it.
Nice.
Because everybody knows that she can do this.
Nice.
And she's just a wonderful lady, jack of all trades, master of everything.
Yes. Yes.
She's just a wonderful lady. I don't know how I ever got so lucky.
Well, I think you both got lucky.
You know, I dated a lot of girls in my life, and I would date them until I decided, is this somebody that I really want to spend the rest of my life with?
Mm.
And she's the first one that answered that question.
Nice.
You know? And boy, I'll tell you, I wanted to hang on tight. So while I was down here in Southern California, in a body cast. I knew she was up there in college, and I couldn't take the chance. I had to nail this down. So we got engaged.
I think she said yes, you just didn't hear it.
Yeah, I think she said too, but she, I don't know if she mumbled it or if she yelled it out loud. I don't know. Is all I know is she was wearing the ring and she hasn't taken it off. So.
There you go. There you go. That's anyway, that's the answer. That answers that.
I really appreciate the time that you have spent with my wife in recording this.
It's such an honor to visit with you both, and to get a chance to have you share this is just so lovely. And it's I'm so honored you both are willing to take so much time to do this. And I thank you both very, very much.
Well, I know there's not an awful lot of people left that have had the experiences that Bonnie has had, you know, with the Georgie White and all that kind of stuff, all the Mount Trumbull experiences.
Right.
There's just not a lot of people left.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know exactly how you found her, but I'm glad you did, and I'm glad this is going to be recorded. So
yeah, I am too.
Anyhow, we need to have copies of this because we've got children.
You bet.
That are saying, when do we get a copy? When do we get a copy? I said, well, then this is all done and wrapped up and
you bet.
All edited and everything.
You
we'll
bet.
Worry about it.
You bet. Well, let's, you know what, let's go ahead and conclude this oral history here, but don't hang up.
Let me give you to Bonnie.
Okie doke.
I'm here.
Bonnie, I mentioned to Alan, thank you so very, very much for allowing me to do this interview with you.
Thank you.
I'm very grateful for your time. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
I don't believe so. We've given you a lot today.
You have, and I'm very grateful. Well,
thank you for being interested.
With that, we'll conclude part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Bonnie and Alan McAllister. Today is Monday, October 17th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Bonnie, thank you so very much.